Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone. And Happy New Year. My name is Bonnie. I think I know most of you. And tonight I will be your speaker. Tonight's talk is titled, were you going to say something, Les?
No, welcome.
Thank you, Les. Thank you. So today's talk is titled, Come Back to Zero. The new year is a time when we often reflect on our life. We think about what went well and what went not so well. And we make New Year's resolutions. We promise ourselves that we will go to the gym, clean the garage, spend less time smoking, shopping, or on social media, or whatever your vice of choice is. In the decade that I was a dance fitness instructor, we always saw spikes in attendance in all of our classes every January and February. Then around late March, April, classes would dwindle back to their usual size, about every year. So that's our normal way of thinking about the new year. How to become a better version of ourselves. A time to let go of things that are not helping, and a time to start something new. But the Zen way of thinking is a little different. Rather than focusing too much on the new year, we recognize that every moment is new. And every day is like our New Year's resolution. Every day, every moment, you are new. The tree outside the window is new. Your old bedtime slippers are new. And the people around you are also new. It's our ideas from the past that keep things limited and constricted. If we see those old views as the only way to see things, and it's our limited perception of ourselves which keeps us stuck in harmful habits from the past. I have a little wooden step stool that I bought a couple years ago. It's not very big. It has two steps, and I would stand on it to reach the high kitchen cabinets or to reach something high in the closet. Then when quarantine started, suddenly I needed a place at home where I could sit Zazen and also set my computer down to join the meetings on Zoom. So I looked for something quickly that would serve as a short table while I'm sitting on the floor. And the first thing that came to mind was that little step stool. So from March through November, that thing was my meditation table and my sacred bell set on the bottom step and my laptop was on the top. It was a perfect meditation table. Then in November, I moved and everything needed to be rearranged in my new place. And so I actually created an elevated place where right now I can sit Zazen so that I can reach the taller altar in the office. And the step stool, which was great while I was sitting on the floor, now is way too short because I'm sitting up high. So I moved it to the bathroom where I can set towels on it and put my phone and listen to music when I take a bath or put a cup of tea. And now it's a bath shelf. So whether we call this two-leveled piece of wood a step stool, or if I call it a meditation table, or if I call it a bath shelf, they are all correct. And they are also all incomplete. There's no name which can truly capture the essence of what this thing is. It's hand-carved, and it has little flowers in it, And so you could even call it a piece of art. And sometimes when I'm cleaning, I'll get tired and I'll sit down on it for a minute. And for that minute, it becomes a chair. Then as soon as I get up, it's back to being a bath stool. So the way I see this object depends on my situation and my intention and my relationship to the object in every moment. Everything in life is like this. We put labels on things and categorize them. It makes it easier to make decisions. We become very efficient. But when we're confronted with a new problem, something we don't know how to solve, we need to drop all of those labels. We need to see things without our limited concepts on top of them, because that's the only way to open up new possibilities. For example, in my kitchen, I have all these jars of food, and one jar has oats in it. So I took a marker and I labeled it oatmeal. Whenever I see this jar labeled oatmeal, I know exactly what to do with it. If I'm hungry, I'll mix it with hot water, dried fruit, and cinnamon, put almond milk on top, and in a few minutes, I'll have breakfast just the way I like it. What if, however, I was not at home, and instead I was stuck in a prison cell, and I desperately wanted to communicate in confidence to my loved ones? Actually, a prisoner in Britain in the 1930s realized that the nature of oatmeal is starch. And when mixed with water, the juice of the oatmeal could be filtered through a rag and used to write invisible messages on paper. The starch was not detectable by any common means, but the recipient could apply an iodine solution, at which point the chemical reaction to the oatmeal starch would produce beautiful blue letters on the previously blank paper. The prisoner realized that he could use his breakfast porridge to write secret messages, confidential letters. So this is thinking outside of the box. It's seeing beyond our usual conception of oatmeal to understand its nature and how it would relate to other substances. In Zen, we try to see the nature of all things rather than focusing on the limited, although useful, labels we've often given them. So if a step stool can be a meditation table and breakfast cereal can be invisible ink, then what are you? I can tell you my labels. My name is Bonnie. I'm a technical product manager. I'm Eurasian, multiracial, 37 years old, born in California. All of that is true, but does it really tell you who I am? If you say that that's who I am, that's like saying that the wooden object is only a step stool, or that the only purpose for the existence of oatmeal is to be eaten with hot water and cinnamon. It's nice, but it's an incomplete picture. It's a shallow understanding. Zen teaches us that there is no separate abiding self. You do not really exist in the way that you conceptualize that you exist. The idea of you, your body, your name, your identity, it's not a solid thing. It's ever moving, ever changing. It is reborn every moment, new. When mountains can walk and rivers can talk, then you're seeing the true nature of things. If we become impatient during Zazen, if we are restless in the quiet and the stillness, it's because we think that there's nothing happening. We see the world with our tiny eyes, and we fill with air our tiny lungs, and we think this is all that's happening, and we feel very, very small. Sometimes we label it boring, useless, nothing is happening. But actually, there's a lot happening. In that moment that you sit zazen, the world is vast. The oceans are deep and the sky is shining, and billions of beings of all shapes and sizes are coming together right now to make your life possible. It's easy for us to fall into the illusion that we are making our own lives possible. After all, it is our own effort to get up in the morning, to make breakfast, work, do the dishes, take out the trash. We do have to make effort to live. But we are not alone in our effort. We're connected to everything. All this time, that tree outside the window has been providing you with oxygen, and you've been providing it with carbon dioxide. And together, you breathe. But we might never notice it. We can spend our whole lives feeling separate from everything, not realizing that all of it is you. That the same life force that flows through everything, all across time and space, forever, flows through you. And that's how big you are. But it's hard to perceive it with tiny eyes and tiny hands. So we sit and we think, nothing's happening. So I don't usually do this, but I'm going to share a funny meme that I found online. And I don't usually share memes, but this one seemed particularly zen. And it's a man in a hotel room. And he calls the front desk and he says, "Hello, can I have a wake-up call?" And the receptionist answers and said, "You are the universe experiencing itself." I thought it was funny. You are the universe experiencing itself. I should put that as my morning wake-up call. So it's a new year and a new moment, and we have the opportunity to start from zero again. You have your body, your senses. You see what you see, and you hear what you hear. And all the meaning we have on top of our sensations, all the judgments we have about ourselves and others, good, bad, etc., is all completely made up. I can think of a lot of things to tell myself about events that just happened only today. Do we say that it was a tragedy? Do we say that I expected it? No surprise. Do we say it's actually paving the way for greater change and awakening? What's our interpretation of what's happening? And what do we say our part is in it? We attach meaning and significance to our experiences. We are constantly telling ourselves a story about our life. Sometimes we forget that we are the narrator of our own life story. So let's take the opportunity to start from zero again. And if you must tell a story of your life that makes you happy and that makes you fulfilled. We can't stop our thoughts. No matter how many years you practice meditation, your thoughts will never stop because it's our nature. It's part of our human consciousness to think. But we can slow down and we can soften. And whenever we are unhappy, we can come back to zero again. And that's the place of creation where anything is possible. Thank you. We are now open for any questions or memes. Any comments?
Bonnie, I thought your meme was very funny. I enjoyed it. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for a lovely talk. It's a really enjoyable one. And, and there's lots of ways to say kind of the same thing. That's what a lot of Zen talks are pretty much. Reminds me of your talk. I thought it was sort of quintessential in some ways. So that's what I really liked about it. Some people do find Zazen boring. They're not ready for it or whatever, you know. Do you have any suggestions for those people who might ask you or say, you know, what's the point? Or you maybe want to give them some encouragement that maybe isn't Zazen, maybe some other activity or thing, but you have something you might point them to.
It's great to see you, Chris. I'd say start small. When I was having trouble sitting Zazen, I set a goal for myself to sit just for 1 minute, only 1 minute. And you'd be surprised how it actually builds confidence. Like I could do a minute. And then watch, I'm going to beat it. I'm going to beat my record. I did 5 minutes, you know? So I think sometimes we set such high expectations of ourselves that we kind of set ourselves up for failure from the beginning. And actually, you know, 1 minute, then 5 minutes, then 7 minutes, then 3 minutes even. Just taking time to pause and take a breath or you know, stop looking at the computer, look out the window for a couple minutes. The point of Zen, from my understanding, is to just deeply connect with our lives, go deeper into our lives. And I personally feel that anything that helps you do that is beneficial. It might not be Zazen, it might not be Zen, but anything that helps you deeply connect with your life and feel truly alive. I don't think anyone can deny that that's a good thing, right? That's what I would suggest is start smaller and celebrate your successes and don't be too hard on yourself. One thing about Zen is that sometimes, specifically in, not so much here in the US, but I think in Japan and in older times, I mean, it was very hard. You see documentaries of a Heiji and the monks are like breaking icicles out of their bowls before they have breakfast. And there are the monks of Mount Hiei. There were some running monks that would run and they would, you know, carry a blade in case they, couldn't make it, they would die, you know? And I think it's a little extreme, I think, you know, but there's different people that need different things. Sometimes we do need some discipline, like we're slacking off and we really need some like strict schedule and we need to sit for 40 minutes. And if you can't sit for 40, sit for 60, you know? If you can't do three bows, bow 9 times. Sometimes that's what we need. But then other times we need the opposite. Right? Other times we need to be loving and caring towards ourselves and forgiving and accepting of our mistakes. So I really think it's about finding balance, you know, like the yin yang symbol. It's about understanding where are we being too rigid with ourselves or where are we being, you know, like too meandering and not really having any direction, kind of wasting our life, right? So I think it's about finding balance, and that reflection helps us to find, you know, where we're out of balance so that we could come back to balance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Teresa.
Mani, thank you for your talk. I'm not sure if I have a I'm not sure I have a question, but I found what you said inspiring, you know, both things about starting from zero. It's good to think that we can do that. Well, both things you said many things, but what I found inspiring was this idea from about starting from zero and also Sasan being sustaining. That's always helpful for me to think that when I sit, I'm being sustained. Mm. It inspires me to sit. So, I don't know, maybe I'll ask you, you know, you said that we can start from zero, that we are fresh, moment after moment is a new moment. And I always wonder, why are we so attached to ourselves, to this idea that we have of ourselves and our ideas and everything? I wonder if you have thought about it and have something that you would like to share.
Mm-hmm. Good question. The reason we're so attached to our interpretations and judgments about what's happening is because we think it's real. We think that's reality. We think that's the way things are inherently, that they cannot be changed. And it's a real challenge to actually separate out what is actually happening, what are the facts, and what is our interpretation. You know, our brain is hardwired to understand patterns. In machine learning classes and data analysis, like, they use analogies. And one is that, okay, if you go drive by and you see a bunch of goats that are all white, then you might come to the conclusion that all goats are white everywhere. But actually, you can only conclude that all goats were white in that particular location at that particular moment from the angle you were looking at. On the other side of the goat, they could be black. You know, you cannot say that. But, you know, we see our limited perception and we extrapolate that that's all there is, rather than being able to see from other perspectives. And it's actually kind of funny when you realize it. You're like, oh, I just made up a whole world and it's not even based on fact. It's kind of a cosmic joke. But why we hold on to it so much? Why we, like, sometimes you realize it and you're like, oh, that's funny, I can let that go. But other times we hold on to it and we're very resistant to let go of our interpretation. And I believe that's because of trauma. It's because when something happens to us that hurts us, we never want that to happen again. And, you know, it's proven that if you have positive experiences or, you know, joyful experiences, and you have really scary or traumatic, painful experiences, we remember the painful experiences more. Because for the human evolution, it's more important to survive necessarily than to be happy, I guess, from a scientific perspective. And I notice this in myself all the time. And I've worked with a lot of people that whenever something happens that upsets you deeply, Usually it goes back many, many years to childhood. That person reminds me of my mom. That person reminds me of my dad when they did that. Almost all the time is something like that. And interestingly, the only way to actually overcome that is to put yourself in an environment or a situation to learn something different. You know, that's why people do group therapy. That's why they go to spiritual groups. That's why, you know, a lot of people that didn't have, let's say, good relationships or a good experience, in order to learn that, you know, it's safe to be with people, in order to learn that, you know, they can have good relationships, they have to consciously put themselves in a safe environment to unlearn, you know, what the trauma has taught you. So trauma in the social context, you know, as opposed to an injury or something, but social trauma teaches you two things that are actually not correct, but it teaches you that you can either be safe or you can be with people. And the truth is that we can also be safe and be with people, and we have to unlearn that tendency to isolate. But you can also have interpretations about anything, you know? It doesn't have to be necessarily just people, but about the world or about yourself. You can have beliefs about yourself. That also usually stems back to how we formed our identity, you know, as a child. So you might be really good at something as a kid and you get praised, and then you think, I'm always great at this. Or you might, you know, like, so random. You know the singer Shakira, right? Shakira. So her singing teacher told her she was terrible. She had the worst voice ever. She'd never make it. And now she's a superstar, right? But that's not the usual way. Like, usually people believe it and it sticks to them. You don't understand that, you know, people can change. And if you're not appreciated in one context, you might be appreciated in a different context. And so I think it's a lot of information, but I think it's all about recognizing that our past experience shapes who we are and how we view the world. And we have to be open to new experiences. Otherwise, we just keep repeating the past forever. Does that answer your question?
Yes. While you were talking, I thought that socially, many times, it's also not very well considered when somebody changes their mind. You know, so stubbornness sometimes is encouraged socially, I think. So I guess there are times when we stay with an idea or a point of view, maybe, I don't know, because of fear of being considered flip-flopping or, you know.
Anyway. People-pleasing, yeah. I mean, I think any judgment we have, like, any quality can be a good or a bad quality depending on the context. So, like, if you say stubborn, well, that could also be persistent. Right? So, I think you're right that a trap that we tend to fall in is trying to please everyone all the time. And that's when we can lose sight of, like, our own internal voice and what we're, what, I don't know, like our, what, who we truly are. When we focus on trying to keep everyone happy, the truth is you can't keep people happy. You can't please everyone. And if you try to please everyone, often you'll end up upsetting everyone sooner or later, because people have different views and different ideas. I think we can try to live peaceably with people. We try to live peacefully, but we can't be everything to everyone. And we have to check in with ourselves and know what's right for us and how much we can give at different times too. Like there might be certain times that we have bandwidth and capacity to give a lot. And there might be other times when we're dealing with a lot ourselves and we don't have a lot to where we can hold other people's problems. So I think trying to stay true to ourselves, even when it's uncomfortable, and being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Yeah, thank you. Diane, and then David. Actually, there we go. Okay, go ahead. Diane?
Thank you, Bonnie, for talking about starting at zero. Kind of thinking about you as a dance instructor, and I've been taking dance lessons, and lately it's on Zoom, of course, and we've had a 2-week break, and we just started back today. And our teacher always refers to us as dancers. And I say, I'm not a dancer. I'm just taking dance lessons. And since I've been sitting more, because I can, with us being on Zoom and don't have to drive to Mountain View, and I'm more motivated to sit almost every day, I see how my mind is just going, always distracted, and I keep coming back to my breath. But I've just become more aware of how my mind chatters. And when I practice my dancing, and I'm listening to the music, and I'm trying to do the steps, even then I get totally distracted. And I realize how difficult it is for me to really be present in the moment and to focus. And I'm feeling really scattered in general. So what would you do if you found yourself getting distracted, even in dancing, even, or just sitting? What kinds of things do you do?
When you're dancing and your mind starts chattering, does it say anything in particular?
It could be, I'm not keeping the beat, I'm not doing the right steps, so there's that negative talk. But then there's also, I'll start thinking about, oh, wait a minute, after I finish this, I have to go do that. Or did I do this? You know, the usual stuff that just chatter. And I try to keep going back to back to zero, like you say, but I find it really difficult.
Yeah, there's a few different things. First of all, that's completely normal in a way. We all have this kind of discursive part of our mind. In Zen, it's called monkey mind, right? Because it's like a monkey. Let me jump from this tree to this tree. And I need to stop at the bank. And I need to go to the store. And I'm not doing it right. And this and that. And it's all over the place. So we all have that part of the mind. If it's very judgmental, you can recognize that what it's actually doing is trying to keep you safe. And that's the same reason you don't call yourself a dancer. Because if you call yourself a dancer, you're expected to be good. If you say, I'm not a dancer, I'm really not a dancer at all, I'm just trying this thing, then there's no expectation. So you're really trying to kind of keep yourself safe. But if you recognize that you're good, you're fine the way you are, and it's about having fun rather than about doing it right, then gradually that might go away. If you shift to, am I doing it right? Shift to just, I'm just going to have fun. I don't care if I'm doing it right. Having fun is doing it right. So that's one way. And another way to deal with the monkey mind is to sometimes like get it out. Like actually you can write it out or you can talk it out and you can just let it rip. And it can be so extreme. Like, you know, just you're the worst dancer in the world that ever existed. And then once you get it out of your system, you're like, okay, I let you have 5 minutes. Can you be quiet now while I go dance? Because it's a part of your mind. And sometimes it just wants to get out there and get released. And sometimes if you stop fighting it, you're like, okay, you got 5 minutes. So then it might calm down afterwards and let you just enjoy your dance class.
That's a great idea.
But there's different ways. It's not that much different from Zazen. It's like you find some way to let it go. But letting it go is not the same as wrestling it to the ground and trying to fight with it. You know, there's this saying, Katagiri Roshi used to say, like, it's like fighting with tofu. It doesn't make any sense. You know, when you fight with your own mind, it's just, you know, don't fight with it. Just let it go. Let it relax.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. David?
Bonnie, thank you for a lovely Dharma talk and a very knowledgeable and full answer to Teresa's question. I kind of wish you would come back because what I have to say is partly to her.
She's there. I can see her shadow. She's there.
I'm listening. I'm taking care of something. I'll be back in a minute.
No worries.
The shadow knows. My whole life has been split between psychotherapy and lots of childhood trauma and a fair amount of Zazen and experiences with other forms of Buddhism. And I've pondered very long on the issue of why the promised synergy between psychotherapy and spiritual work never seems to happen very well. Maybe especially in Zen, it doesn't happen very well. At least it hasn't for me. That's been my struggle. And I eventually invented a little aphorism that has put that question to rest for me. And that is not always so, which happens to be the title of one of Suzuki Roshi's books. And the behind this not always so is the realization that a psychotherapy treatment gets fixed on a particular problem and then analyzes that some more. And pretty soon you've been talking on the sofa for 10 years and you're still in that same problem.
Mm-hmm.
The Zen teaching is that things will change. And if I don't remind myself of that problem that I've already discussed for 10 years, then some other problem will come up and it will evolve. And it's not... So therefore, the Zen practice of not sitting on a particular psychological problem makes a lot of sense. And for many, many years, that dichotomy made no sense to me.
Mm.
So not always so explains the difference in approach of psychotherapy, tearing a problem apart like a dog with a bone,
mm-hmm.
and Zazen, as agonizing as the problem may be, the faith that it will turn into something else. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your experience, David. Regarding psychotherapy, so of course there's many different kinds of therapists and skills and different people resonate with different people. However, I will say that psychotherapy as a whole is designed to be safe, you know, safe to work with the most severe mental illnesses. People who are schizophrenic, have multiple personalities, and you know, nothing against any of these disorders, but it's designed to work even with people who are very, very mentally disturbed and even dangerous. And what that means is it's incredibly slow. And it's a lot of it is, tell me more. Okay, tell me more. And you don't get a lot of feedback and you don't get a lot of structure and you don't get challenged to actually, you know, take control of your life or coaching to develop something new. It's very passive in a way. And so I find that for a lot of people, they're capable of something a little bit more, I don't know, something with a little bit more discipline, something with a little bit more, you know, incentive. I don't know how to describe it, but a lot of times I think that's why it's very slow, is that like, it doesn't really speak to the greatness in people. It treats people, you know, like they're kind of delicate and they're kind of fragile, and it's not really that empowering a lot of times. Now, again, every person, every practice is different, nothing against psychotherapy, but I do think that if anyone tries psychotherapy and it's not working for you, you know, there are other things out there that might speak to the greatness in you more, or speak to you like you're a capable person, you know, capable of moving on in your life and not just repeating the same sad story over again. But you found that out for yourself. I did too. So thank you. Any other questions or comments tonight? Oh, I see Dan.
Hey, Bonnie, thanks for the talk. I think starting from zero is really great to hear, and I've been thinking about it. I think that with the new year and a little reflection over the holidays, it's a nice message to hear, and it speaks of possibility. So yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Dan. Good to see you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandaigua Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.